100 examples of what it isn't. But you, man, you're going to have a hell of a time saying what it is.
Hello, I am Farha Khan. This is Prof Talk. The sounds of Bollywood film, the largest center of film production in the world, producing songs that channel through India's veins, mesmerizing every year a few more million listeners. Today I speak with a man that knows all about Bollywood film. My guest is Associate Professor Ken Bryant from the UBC Department of Asian Studies. Dr. Bryant has been with the department since 1974, and his research interests are primarily in Hindi, Urdu languages and literature. Information technology and software design has also been central to his many different roles at UBC, developing software for laser printing of Hindi and Sanskrit. Next term, Dr. Bryant will be teaching a new course here at UBC on Bollywood film that will cover the history, aesthetics, politics, and social roles of Bollywood film. Ken, welcome to Prof Talk.
Thanks, Farah.
Can you first, if you will, maybe give us a brief description of the languages of Hindi and Urdu? Put them into some sort of context for our listeners.
Well, briefly, they're languages spoken in India and in Pakistan and in places in the world where migrants from India and Pakistan have gone. You can usually get any group in South Asia into a lively debate over the issue of whether they are two languages or one. Without going into the details, if you asked me for my answer to that question, I'd say they're the same language as long as you're speaking them, but they're written in totally different scripts. So Hindi, which is the most important of the many official languages of India, is written in the Devanagari script, inherited from the ancient language Sanskrit. And Urdu, which is the most important of the major languages of Pakistan, is essentially the same grammar and a somewhat different vocabulary, but written in the Arabic script, or in the script from Arabic and from Persian. But if you have two people on the streets of Delhi or two people on the streets of Lahore in Pakistan speaking in either one of these languages, they're going to be able to understand each other. They're going to be understood by other people around them until they start writing.
Now, and some people refer to these languages as Hindustani. Can you define that term as well?
Yeah, there's a lot of vague terms that have been used for this language across North India and what is now Pakistan. Hindustan is one of the names for India, and it's an old Persian word that simply means the people who live the other side of the Indus River, the other side from Iran. Mahatma Gandhi was one of the main proponents of using that word, Hindustani, to label the language because he was trying to avoid the religious implications that had come to be attached to the two languages. But it's not a word, Hindustani is not a word that you hear a lot these days in India. Mostly people are going to refer to Hindi if they're speaking of something in a Hindu context or an Indian national context, and they're going to call it Urdu if they're speaking in an Islamic or a Pakistani context.
So at UBC, Hindi and Urdu are lumped together in the same course.
Yeah, we put a hyphen between them.
Yes. How do you distinguish between the two languages when you teach the class? I mean, in what way do you bring the differences in the class together?
That's a good question. And the differences, bringing in the differences between them is a very important matter, particularly because now in the 21st century, when those languages are often associated with the language, with the religions of Hinduism or Islam, it becomes very important to be able to modulate your language to adapt to the community that you're speaking to or the community that you're attempting at least not to alienate. And so our students learn the Devanagari script, the Hindi script, first, because there are somewhat more people in the world who read that than the other, and also because it's a more phonetic script than is Arabic, as bent to the needs of Urdu. But they begin, by the middle of the first year, they begin learning the second script. So scripts, okay. they learn both. Vocabulary, even very common vocabulary, is often different depending on whether you're speaking in a context of, say, a Hindu family or the context of a Muslim or Sikh family. And it's important for students to learn both of those.
And now what about pronunciation? Are there differences?
Yeah, there are, but the differences really are more a matter of the region. There are sounds that come from Arabic or from Farsi, so sounds like kha and qa that don't exist in most of the indigenous Indian languages. So to some extent, you have a different set of sounds when speaking Urdu. But really, every region of India and Pakistan has a slightly different take on the sounds of these languages, and the pronunciation differences are more marked by region than they are by religion.
Now, where in India exactly are these languages spoken? We know Pakistan is Urdu is the official language in India. Where is Hindi and Urdu spoken widely?
So the short answer for India is the north. Most of the north speaks either a dialect of Hindi or languages closely related to Hindi. Punjabi, for example, which is the Indian language that we're most that we encounter most often in Vancouver, Punjabi is a very close relative of Hindi, about as close as, say, Spanish and Italian. And from Bengal state, which has its own language, Bengali, in the east, Punjab in the west, which has its own language, everything in between those two states has an official language of Hindi. That may not be the languages that people speak as dialects in the villages, but the languages taught in the school system across the north are primarily Hindi. Pakistan is a little more complicated situation. There is no region of Pakistan that has primarily Urdu. The place in Pakistan that's most associated with Urdu probably is the city of Karachi, because of a very large immigrant community who went from India to Pakistan in 1947. And most of those were from Urdu-speaking areas of North India. So in a city like Lahore or even in the capital in Islamabad, those people who are from that region for generations will probably speak Punjabi in their household. And this is something actually that Vancouverites need to realize, is that there are more Punjabi speakers in Pakistan than there are in India, many times more.
Wow.
But those in Pakistan write Punjabi in the Arabic script.
Interesting.
The script used by Sikhs, who make up most of Vancouver's Punjabi-speaking community, that Gurmukhi script is not the one used for Big Punjab. I mean, Big Punjab is in Pakistan. Little Punjab is in India.
Wow, fascinating. Now, I'd like to ask you, when did you begin to learn these two languages? And when did that start? And maybe you can tell me about how you think the languages have evolved since you first started to learn them.
Ah, okay. Well, how I learned them and when I learned them was a very long time ago. I was an engineering student, an engineering and physics student. I went for my second year of engineering studies to the University of California at Berkeley. And this was in 1964, when interesting political things were happening on the Berkeley campus, and they weren't happening on the engineering side of campus. And I persuaded my father to send me to India for a year to study engineering in Bombay at IIT, at the Indian Institute of Technology. I never actually got there. I began looking into the place that I was going to go. I had been accepted to IIT and thought I ought to know something about India. I thought I ought to learn something about a language. I didn't realize at that time how many there were. And I became fascinated and finally told my father that I wasn't going to study engineering anymore. He took away my plane ticket, but he funded the rest of my undergraduate education in Hindi and Urdu. And at the point that I graduated with my first degree, I had a very academic knowledge of the language. I couldn't understand anything that anybody said when I first went to India, but if they wrote it down for me, I could read it. But I then spent, my wife and I both spent 2 years as American Peace Corps volunteers in Bihar State, or actually in a part of Bihar that's now become Jharkhand State. And we were in a village for 2 years, and there was no option but speaking Hindi. So that was really what cemented the spoken language.
And now, throughout all of these years, have you gone back to India many times?
Yeah, many times. Yeah. Many times to India and occasionally to Pakistan.
And so, what since the 1960s, do you think these languages have evolved in some way? Have they changed at all? I mean, do you see... I know in my side of the family, one thing that I have noticed is that my parents speak Urdu, and my cousins, it sounds like some of the Urdu, at least for the Persian words, are not as much present, and it's more Hindi and that kind of thing. Do you see that in just sort of in general with the language in terms of maybe taking or losing a little bit of maybe the heritage of the language?
Well, certainly in that 50 years, or almost 45 years, the languages have evolved. And I mean, this, we need to realize that pretty much all languages, every place, are changing all the time. And with social change and just with the onrush of history, languages are constantly modifying. In India and Pakistan, I think maybe the main difference during that period has been an increasing identification of language with religion. And I keep coming back to that theme. I think, I mean, emotionally, I think that's a sad fact, but it is a fact. Before independence and partition in 1947, when India and Pakistan both became independent from the British and separated into two countries, Urdu was, in areas like the Punjab, the common written language used by Hindus, by Muslims, by Sikhs. There was relatively little distinction by religion. The language was seen as a tool that worked for everybody. But since the partition, I mean, it's been said by many people before that the difference between a dialect and a language is that a language is a dialect with an army. And, you know, in a sense, you can use that in this case. Urdu is the same dialect with a Pakistani army, and Hindi is the same dialect with an Indian army. I mean, I'm being a little facetious, but Hindi, the Hindi, for instance, of newspapers has over this period become increasingly Sanskritized, that is, increasingly Hinduized, increasingly draws its new vocabulary from Sanskrit, the classical language of Hindus. And Urdu has reacted in exactly the opposite direction and throws out those words that come from Sanskrit and replaces them with words that come from Persian and Arabic. Mm. So I think that would be the major difference. The other difference is a certain degree of uniformity in the grammar across both India and Pakistan, coming with education in part, but even more coming with Bollywood. Bollywood film has really set the standards far more than any academic community, far more than the school system, for what is considered acceptable Hindi or Urdu. And the language spoken on Bollywood films is really quite neutral between the two. If anything, it leans somewhat to the Urdu direction more than to the Sanskritized Hindi direction. So I tell students in my first year Hindi-Urdu class that the official standard in terms of accent and grammar that they should follow is now the actor Shah Rukh Khan, who is perhaps the most popular actor, male actor in Bollywood, and who has a very clean Urdu and or Hindi and has people writing for him who consistently use a very standard Hindi. Uh-huh. So I think that standardization through Bollywood and that spread of Hindi hyphen Urdu through the film industry has been one of the biggest effects that I've seen over that half century.
Well, let's talk about your new course on Bollywood film, which will be offered next term. Can you?
Sure. And actually, I may have misled you when I said that it was a new course. It's been offered twice before.
Oh, okay.
I offered it in the second term last year, and I offered it again in the summer.
Okay.
And it's had quite large enrollments, which is not terribly surprising. I mean, the department shamelessly rode the coattails of Slumdog Millionaire, figured that if we were ever going to do a Hindi film course, this was the time. We didn't expect to have any difficulty attracting a South Asian audience to the class. But we've also, I think partially because of the popularity of Slumdog Millionaire, we've been able to attract an equally large group of students who are not South Asians. And the class is taught in English, and the films are watched with subtitles. So in that sense, the material is open to everyone. The direction that I take with the lectures really is to sit down and watch the films myself and think, what would a South Asian student totally miss if they only watched the subtitles for this film? What are the jokes that the subtitles wouldn't be able to translate? What are the family relationships? What are the kinship terms? I mean, we talk early on in that course about the fact that there is one word in English for uncle and one word for aunt. But in Hindi and in most other North Indian languages, there are five terms typically used for each of those, you know, depending on is it your mother's brother or your father's brother that is your uncle? And if it's your father's brother, is it your father's older brother or your father's younger brother? And all of these things have implications for the pecking order in the family, for heredity, for inheritance laws. So, I mean, these are important terms. And when they get reduced on screen in the subtitles to aunt and uncle, we miss half the subtlety. I mean, that's just one example of many. So the attempt in that course is to make some sense of the culturally and linguistically bound parts of Hindi film that we would normally pass over and wouldn't understand.
And do present a broad spectrum of movies from the past as well as the present, or how do you choose which movie?
Yeah.
And how do you manage to play an entire movie in a class?
I think we'd better not discuss the legal aspects of that, because these are all films for which there are no official rates that we could pay someone to show these films. So the class during the summer met in 3-hour blocks, which is perfect. And during the year, we meet in hour and a half blocks, so it takes us two classes to show a film. And then there are films assigned to students for homework, too. So they each have to go out and buy DVDs, legal DVDs, of course, and see a certain number of films for writing their term papers.
Do you have any favorite Bollywood film?
Oh, yes. My favorite Bollywood film is Dil Se. It wasn't a great hit at the box office. It does have Shah Rukh Khan. And it's a film by the South Indian director Mani Ratnam, who's in some ways a controversial and a provocative director. So it's a very political film.
Yeah, and do you what do you do in the class? You watch the film and then you have a discussion, or how do you dissect a movie that's that potentially 3 hours long, and look at it in very specific aspects of it?
Well, the watching the film, we just do. We just sit there and we watch it. But there's a lecture before, and there's a class discussion after the film. That is, a day before, there's a lecture, and a day after, there's a discussion. There are also a number of themes throughout the term that we work on, and particularly we work on themes having to do with the ways in which the culture of Islamic India and the culture of Hindu India are intertwined in the film. So to some extent, this is even just learning to recognize costumes. For people simply to learn the stereotypic costumes or the stereotypic styles of beards, the styles of saris and so forth, that allow an Indian or Pakistani audience to immediately know who these people are supposed to be, what community the actors are representing. But we also look at traditions like qawwali, a style of singing associated primarily with Pakistan and primarily with Pakistani Punjab, which it comes into Hindi film after Hindi film. I think many of the Indian students don't even realize that it's qawwali that they're seeing, but there are song routines that for those drenched in the culture are always evocative of Islam. And there are bhakti bhajans that are sung, or the theme of the love of Radha and Krishna that are used in film after film after film to evoke Hinduism or to evoke a Hindu community. All of this has to be brought out in lecture. And so typically in lecture I will show scenes from six films that use a qawwali and scenes from six films that that have a bhajan with the Radha Krishna theme, so that people begin to recognize these tropes and know them when they see them in another film.
Fascinating. And finally, in a couple of weeks, you're going to be presenting a lecture about Islam and the culture of devotion in North India. Can you give us a little bit of a sneak preview about it?
I actually just did. At the time that title evolved, I hadn't decided yet just what I was going to do with the lecture. So it is going to be about Islam and the culture of devotion, but it's also going to be about Hinduism and the culture of devotion. And in both cases, what I'm going to look at is Bollywood film, and look at the way in which those two devotional idioms are used in Bollywood, and the ways in which they're often intertwined in the same film.
Right. Wow. It's been a fascinating discussion with you, and I wish you the best of luck when you have that scholarly lecture in a couple of weeks. I hope I can attend it. And thank you for joining us.
Thanks. I look forward to seeing you there.
All right. Take care. So You've been listening to Prof Talk on UBC CITR 101.9 FM and via live web streaming on CITR.ca. If you've just tuned in, I've just been speaking with Professor Ken Bryant from the Department of Asian Studies. On Tuesday, October 19th, between 11 and 12:20 p.m., Ken Bryant will be speaking on Islam and the culture of devotion in North India. The event will take place on will be at the UBC Asian Center Auditorium. On 1871 West Mall. And next week, I will speak with Dr. Neil Safier from the UBC Department of History. Neil will be discussing his research and current class on the history of Amazonia, as well as a recent conference he attended in Manaus, the capital state of Amazonas. We would love to hear your feedback, so you can email us at proftalk@gmail.com. And for an updated schedule of shows, you can visit our blog at ubcproftalk.blogspot.com. And finally, you can hear the podcast of this show anytime on citr.ca. And I'm Farah Khan. I will talk to you in 2 weeks, and I'm going to leave you now with that wonderful song from Bollywood, from one of my favorite movies when I went to India about 20 years ago. It's called Aashiqui, and the song is right here. Thanks.
Meri zindagi hai tu meri har khushi hai tu meri zindagi hai tu meri har khushi hai tu hi pyar tu hi chaahat tu hi aashiqui hai tu meri zindagi khushi
city far, far away.
CITR
was born. In the decade ahead, America will be in space.